This is the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Morgan strikes. Good stop from Trafford. Flew across to his right.
Hello and welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Me, Matt Beadle, here with the voice of goalkeeping, Richard Lee.
Matthew Beadle, how are we?
Yes, we are not too bad. Delighted with the guest that we have on this week. I realised upon starting this intro that he is the youngest goalkeeper we've ever had on, I believe.
I guess he would be when I think about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he must be actually. Who would be the next? Who would be the second youngest, you know?
Ooh, who would be the second youngest?
I'm testing you now. I love putting things on your toes like this.
Yeah, off the top of my head, I do not know. Yeah, I can't think. We've definitely done younger goalkeepers because I know that you've asked the question about what has goalkeeping given you and thought you've not really gone that far in your career yet.
I think with this particular guest, he doesn't feel like he's that young. Like so much has happened to him already. I do sort of think about him, many years above what he actually is. Should we name who it is? Yeah, are we just going to keep building this up?
You do this every time. You realise that people click on a podcast knowing full well who the guest of the podcast is. So, of course, it is James Trafford, Manchester City goalkeeper, currently on loan with Bolton Wanderers. Actually, he recorded this. We recorded this about 2 weeks prior to it actually being released. And in that time we recorded it, we mentioned that there were two games left. Those two games have since surpassed, and he is now due to play in the playoffs as of this weekend, I believe, against Barnsley. So they are two games away from promotion to the Championship.
Indeed, exciting times. Three potential games, of course, a two-legged semi-final and maybe another Wembley appearance.
Before we get on with it, we should just very quickly add that there is a slight beep you might hear throughout this podcast, and that is because James hadn't quite adjusted the batteries in his smoke alarm. That's a conversation for after the podcast, I think, when you just learn a little bit more about Mr. Trafford himself. On with the show.
Let's do it.
This week's guest is a goalkeeper who has gone from trotter to a canter in the past 18 months. Raised on a farm, he was developed in a city and is now wondering where the next stage in a blossoming career will take him. Records have been broken, Pep penalties have been saved, and a Team of the Week spot is as regular as one of his many consecutive clean sheets. James Harrington Trafford, a.k.a. the Cockermouth Casillas. Welcome to the Goalkeepers Union podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
Delighted to have you on. Harrington.
Yeah, Harrington.
That's the first time I've heard that as a middle name.
Yeah, I don't know why. I think it's like my dad's mum's maiden name or something. I don't know, I tell everyone it's Harry.
Yeah.
It's just easier.
Well, a good start. Of course, Richard Lee is here with us too, and with every podcast that we do, James, Richard starts with what was initially three but is now five quick fire questions.
It's five. He's increased it for you, so again, must be something special about it. So first question I do always remember, that is, what gloves do you wear?
I wear the Adidas ones without a strap. They're just the ones, the standard ones.
Okay, nice. What's your favourite ever kit?
Jesus, favourite ever
Actually,
kit.
It could be the one you've had, or it could be maybe of a goalkeeper you've seen.
Nah, favourite one I've had is probably the one I remember the most is the Carlisle one when I was like nines, because I wore the same one for 3 years because they didn't have the money to give us a new one. So actually, I wore the same light blue one for 3 years. Really? It's the one I remember the most.
Oh, it's the one you remember. Is it actually your favourite though, or was it a nice kit?
It was just standard light blue with a Carlisle badge on it.
This goes everywhere here, doesn't it? We've had kits from current players who like the kit that they're currently wearing. We've had players say they like the kits that goalkeepers they don't know wear. And we've never had a goalkeeper say they prefer the kit they wore as an under nine.
It's just the one I remember the most because I just wore it every game for 3 years at Carlisle until I left.
Brilliant. Best kind of answer we could get.
Was it like the exact same shirt as well? I'm intrigued about this now because for
3 years... Yeah, because it had like... You know when like you wear some at Lowe's and like you pull the thread out of it and there's like lines?
Yeah.
Like that was like all over it because it was that old.
I love that. Next question. Most memorable save you've ever made?
I don't know. I made a good one against Port Vale this season that I remember because I thought it was quite good. But apart from that, Not one sticks out, but probably the one against Port Vale.
Do you kind of, are you one of these goalkeepers where you could look back on a season and you'll remember every game, or do you just kind of play the games and they just come and go?
No, I could remember like everything from most games.
Yeah.
Like if someone asked about a game, I could tell you most of the things what happened in the game.
Yeah.
But like I don't think about it too much. I've just got a good memory.
Talk us through the save.
The save was short corner. The guy's like crossed it in quite flat. The guy's gone ahead, it missed it, and it's gone to the guy kind of between the like the middle and to the back post, like in that half the goal, and he's headed it back across as low, and I've tipped it around the post, and it was quite close. It was maybe, I don't know, 5 yards out or something, 6 yards out.
Sounds good. I like it. okay, who is your goalkeeping icon? Do you have like a goalkeeping icon you look up to?
At the moment, no. I watch a lot of goalies, but there's not one I look up to. But when I was younger, it was Petr Cech. Like, I loved him. I loved him that much. I wanted to get a like scrum cap to wear because he wore one. I remember going to Sports Direct and trying to get my mum to buy his one, but she wouldn't. But yeah, because I was a Chelsea fan when I was younger, I loved Petr Cech and just everything about him.
Nice. I mean, you could bring that in now. That could just be a thing. You know, you could get no. You could get
nah, I'm no all right. No. I'm all right.
And the last of the five questions that we now have, and I've got a feeling I'm going to know who you're going to say for an answer on this, but who's the best goalkeeper that you've ever played with, worked with, or against?
Probably the best, Edison.
Yeah.
Edison's the best I've trained with just because of how like intense he is. Like every day you train, no matter what time we got back the night before, or no matter if you played the game like day before, he'd train the next day like full tilt, and just how good he was with his feet, like he could kick it anywhere and he'd kick it so hard. So Edison.
So before we get into your career as such, we should just set the scene. So we're sitting in your apartment or house. We're gonna call it a house in Bolton right now. Just talk us through the surroundings here, because I can see plants, I can see a fish, I can see what seems to be some sort of potpourri decor to my left here. I've seen more trainers than I've ever seen in a hall in my life, and there are some paper plates and plastic cutlery.
Yeah, so this is my kitchen that doesn't get used too much, to be honest, apart from the microwave. But what have I got here? I've got some plants and some, I don't even know what they are, but they came with the house. I've got a polar bear that was a Christmas decoration that just hasn't come down yet. then I've got my fish because my mum bought them for me birthday because I wanted a dog, but I wouldn't look after it apparently. So I had to get fish. Then paper plates and cutlery because it just saves washing up.
You see, and we've got that in common. I know we touched on this off air, but we've got to speak about this. We've got this in common. I don't now, and that's for different, well, I say for different reasons, but when I was younger, when I was your age, that made so much sense to me, especially if you haven't got a dishwasher and you're going to be spending hours a day cleaning, cooking, doing whatever. So the fact that you use your microwave a lot, I'm assuming that is microwave meals, the fact that you are then really limiting the time that you're giving to that type of thing.
Yeah, no, I go by the thing of work smarter, not harder. So the chef at the club puts me up the food that I just microwave at night, and then I'll either eat it in that or eat it on a paper plate and then just chuck it in bin, and that's me. Sorted for food.
And I've got a lot of time for this. I know Matt won't, because I know this is kind of like, we're polar opposites when it comes to this type of thing. But for me, I've got a lot. By the way, is that your fire alarm in the background that keeps going off?
Smoke alarm.
Smoke alarm. So you haven't changed the batteries?
It's been out of battery since August.
Again, brilliant. But Matt, I'll let you crack on with that, because I know you're going to have a very different viewpoint.
No, streamlining, of course. I get it. But we'll move into goalkeeping. It's absolutely fine. So we'll journey through some of your career thus far. Quite a short career. You're only 20 years old as things stand, and potentially a second visit to Wembley. You've had one already this season, potentially a promotion in the offing. That's going to be coming, but I think we want to focus more on the fact that the last 15 to 18 months for you have been not a whirlwind, but you've massively progressed as a goalkeeper. You're a Manchester City goalkeeper. You're on loan at Bolton at the moment, but how have you found it?
I found it, I've really enjoyed it, to be fair. There's been a lot of, I've grown up and developed as a person massively, but it's what I expect at this age, because you grow a lot. But yeah, I've really enjoyed it, and enjoyed sort of the different sort of aspect in the team that I've been sort of coming in as sort of like, essentially like an unproven goalie into Bolton, and people not really fancying us. So when I finished as a second year at City, I was going on loan, and I went on loan to Aki, and looking back, ideally it probably wasn't the best choice to have gone to, but I made that decision and it happened. And then looking back on it, I'm really thankful for it to happen. And then left there, went to Bolton and enjoyed the second half of the season, playing and sort of like playing well and establishing myself. And having us to now being sort of like, I view myself as one of like the main characters. And for a lone player, I feel that's quite good, because I feel myself as like one of the main people and one of the more like leaders in the team. So yeah, I've grown massively.
You're only 20 at the moment, so that's quite a claim to make.
Yeah, but I sort of how I am is that I'm quite loud and quite like out there in the changes and all that. Because I've done quite a lot of good stuff so far in my career. Everyone sort of respects us and listens to us.
Just in regards to Aki, because you mentioned, you know, you're obviously there, obviously no doubt learnt a hell of a lot being there, but you did have a couple of tough times. And certainly, obviously, it's a very different environment, I'm guessing, at Aki. And then obviously the move to Bolton. How did you find that at Aki, where you did come out of the team? Was it once you came out or was it twice? I'm just trying to...
Twice.
How did you find that? Because I can imagine as a young goalkeeper, it's quite tough.
To be fair, the whole Aki experience was a bit of like, in the moment, I didn't really enjoy it, especially being out the team. But I look back on it and I'm quite grateful it happened, to experience like that kind of extreme, because a lot of people did say Accrington was quite old-fashioned before I went, but I didn't really anticipate it being what it was like. But it's sort of something I learned from that. I should have done like more like research about the club and sort of asked a lot more questions. But I joined there and it was very different, especially coming from City, where I was around the first team quite a lot before I went to Accrington. So I sort of went from one end of the spectrum to the other. And yeah, I played the first 9 games and then I got took out the team. I can totally understand why I did. And then when I was on the bench the first time, it was kind of like, all right, I'm going to work to try and get back in the team, work as hard as I can and get back in the team, because I feel like it wouldn't be long until I did. So I was quite like highly motivated and quite like there was a lot, I was quite positive that in that stage being out the team. And then I got put in for 2 more games and then got taken out after 2 more games. And after that, it was like completely different. I was kind of like, I was really negative. Like, I just really wanted January to come because I wanted to move on, and that was sort of me. And sort of looking back, it probably wasn't the right attitude, but everything happens for a reason, I guess.
And again, this is where I suppose talking about learning experiences, learning environments, then go from that to then go to Bolton. I mean, it's fair to say that, you know, again, at the time of speaking, you're potentially in line for the Golden Glove, although I'm right in saying you've now fallen one behind, which you've still got a couple of games, though, so I'm sure there's still time. But it's then gone from that to stepping into Bolton, and it really has just gone from strength to strength. Do you think a lot of that was from the Accrington experience?
Yeah, there's a lot of things I did learn from being at Accrington, like how important it is to be number one in every game. You have to approach it in like, you have to give it like, I give it everything, but like the importance of every game, all it takes is one bad game and it shifts all the positive momentum you've got. And then one bad game, it turns to 2 bad games. And then because I was so young, I was 18, 19, and a lone goalie. And then the team weren't doing too well at Accrington. Like, it's only a matter of time until you get taken out of the team. So coming to Bolton, I appreciated how important it is to be number one, and every day you have to be at full tilt and you have to do as much as you can to stay in the team. But yeah, I was thankful for everything that happened at Aki. And also, growing up through the academy, there's a lot of people that like want you to succeed. They like want to see you do well and want you to succeed. But then when I went to Aki, it's like they don't know you as a person. So like they're not totally like team traff. They're like, they're not really too bothered. So they're not totally on your side. So like they don't really help you out too much. But yeah, it helped me grow up massively. I sort of joined Accrington as a kid, and now I look how I am now. I feel like I'm a man now. So yeah, I'm happy for it.
And I suppose leading on from that, and before Matt carries on with the journey that he's going to take us on, no doubt, this afternoon, like, obviously, having spoke to you quite a bit over the past few years now, like, I'm well aware that psychologically, I talk a lot about this when it comes to goalkeepers, but like your belief in yourself, and certainly going into this experience now at Bolton and going from strength to strength, is that something you've just always had as a goalkeeper growing up? Is it something that has increased as you've gone up through the age groups?
To be fair, growing up and that, especially when I was younger, from like for instance, like when I used to play when I was younger, like I used to try as hard as I can, I used to do as much as I can, but I never really, like, I always remember the coach asked me what I wanted to achieve in football, and I said to be a professional. So like, because like everyone says they want to play for England or play in the Premier League, but I was like, as long as I'm a professional, then I'll see where it goes from there. That was like my mindset when I was quite young, like 14, 15. And then it was sort of until I got into like 15, 16 is when I started being around the England stuff. And then like I got my first, I got my pro contract at City, like offered it. And then you sort of realise like what they think of you. And you think that, oh, you can be quite good. But then I was never really like as confident as I am now in me. It's sort of, I feel like I've kicked on massively over the past 12 months. And I've really sort of like became who I am and really own it. To be fair, before this year, I've always been confident, but not to the extent I am now.
I think there's a lot to be said in the fact that I notice it, to be fair. When you went to Accrington, like you said, almost like a bright-eyed and bushy-tailed young footballer. What, 18 years old? Yeah. Your first crack at pro football, excited about what was to come. And I think also it feeds into the whole right environment fit that we speak so much about on the podcast. Accrington clearly wasn't the right fit for you. Bolton has very much been the right fit for you. And I know that was a strategic decision to go and sign on loan for another season at Bolton this season. And I think that you can just tell, like you said, you just said there, you feel like you're a man now. I think you can tell both mentally and physically when you see you on the football pitch and also seeing you in interviews as well, you've changed so much in that short space of time.
Yeah, because like when I first joined Accrington, I looked about 12. Even though I was 18, I looked so young. I had no like beard. My hair was all over the spot. And it was even like at the start of the season in games, like I was so like, I had like a Red Bull before every game. And then like I played every game at like 100 mile an hour. And like I was trying to get myself involved with the fans, like if we won, trying to give them it. And it's like, and then like one of the big things that you take from Edison is like, regardless if he's playing, for instance, like a low down team in the Premier League or like tonight when they play against Arsenal, he'll be at the same as he's been all season. And that's how you play like 50 games a season, just being at the same. So yeah, I've grew up massively. I've learned so much about what it takes to be a pro and what it takes for me to play well. And yeah, it's good.
I mean, you do look much older now. I mean, that beard is looking so strong, so strong. I mean, you look late 20s now, please.
One day I'll be like, you're rich.
No, you want yours to be real, mate. You want yours to be real. So you mentioned the fans there. Mm. Now, Bolton fans on one hand, there have been some incredible moments over the past couple of seasons. I'm trying to think of the game. Was it Morecambe? Yeah. Fans running on the pitch. Brilliant. There was a game at... There was a fan who was at one end.
Oh, Fleetwood.
Fleetwood.
And he ran across the pitch.
Ran across the entire pitch. Unbelievable. But you mentioned that you gave it back to fans. I think it was it Sunderland where you gave them the shush?
Yeah.
What do you make of that now? Is that something, because we see it with Aaron Ramsdale, we see it with Jordan Pickford, we see it with a couple of other goalkeepers too who play that character, but you feel like maybe you've started to come out of that already?
Yeah. I feel like, because at the start, like, if we scored, I'd try to shush him, and it's just like thinking back, like, what am I doing? Like, what's the point? It's just totally like unnecessary. And then we played Sunderland away, and I was very young at the time. Like, I had a group chat with all my mates, and after the game, I'd like send in a picture, like the score, and I put a comment after it. And the Sunderland one, I accidentally put on my story, and then that and went quite like big, and it went like, and then people started screenshot, and it went everywhere.
Nice.
And it sort of, that's where it sort of felt like, what am I doing here? Just like, he's totally unnecessary, just for like. Because like a few laughs off of my mates, but my mates are like, I'm really close with them. They'll like, I could send anything else and they'll laugh. Like, we have good banter, but like, but it's now, it's like this season, I don't try and get involved with the fans because there's no point. Like, you're just trying to wind them up for what reason? Because 10 seconds later, you just turn around and walk and that's it. So, but everyone's like, Ramsdale is Ramsdale. That makes him tick, but. But for me now, it's just like, what's the point? Just clap them when the game finishes and that's it. And then just go celebrate with your teammates. So I don't see much point in it nowadays.
And your relationship with the Bolton fans too has grown, especially considering when you were first due to sign for them, there was not a bit of backlash, but a slight bit of curiosity, I suppose, apprehension from some fans that you were quite young.
Yeah, I remember because I was young and Accrington didn't have the biggest like, social media, like audience, for instance. And then, because I didn't realise how big Bolton was until I was signing for them. Like, I've always drove past the stadium but never been in it. And the only experience I have with the Bolton fans was when they played Accrington at Accrington and they sold out the away end. So that kind of gave me an indication. But I know when I was signing, all that kind of the rumours were coming out, I was just seeing like my Twitter and I was thinking, like, what have I done to deserve this? But like, I understand where they're coming from because they were, I think they were 18th at the time. And they were going for a new goalie. And if you see that they signed a 19-year-old, that I think I conceded about 1,000 goals in 11 games at Akron. So like, I understand where they were coming from. So like, but I just knocked off my Twitter. I was like, what's the point of me seeing this? I'm not going to get happy over it. No one's saying anything nice. So I was just like, I'm just going to knock off my Twitter and then just see how it, and then just see how it goes. And I played on the Saturday, did well, and then I was apparently the best thing since sliced bread after the Saturday. So within 3 days, I've gone from the worst thing to the best thing. So like, The fans are what they are. They're unbelievably reactionary, and bad news gets more clicks than good news. So you just got to learn it.
Just on that, actually, just to jump in there, because now, how do you react now? Because that's, again, social media being what it is, of course. Do you ever read the comments, or are you someone now that just completely stays away from any comments?
No, I try not to read them. Like, the occasional time, if I have a really good game, and like, I'm genuinely think nothing bad can be said about me. Like, I haven't wound up any away fans. I didn't chirp up to someone on the pitch. I genuinely play really well. Sometimes I'll Google my own name just to see some praise about us, because everyone likes to see praise about themselves. But apart from that, unless someone like says something like terrible to us, that one of my mates will find on like Twitter and they'll screenshot it and send it in for a few laughs in group chat. Like, apart from that, I don't see it. Oh, if someone comments on my Instagram, I'll see that, because I do my own Instagram, but not too many people do it. So I don't really see anything of it, which I find the best way, especially moving forward, is it's going to get bigger.
And the stats speak for themselves, don't they? So you started with 4 clean sheets. You know all of this, right? So 4 clean sheets in your first 4 games. No goalkeeper for Bolton had ever done that before. No new goalkeeper for Bolton had ever done that. From January last season to the end of the season, it was just 3 defeats in 22 games. So your impact definitely played a part in that. This season, you went 9 clean sheets in a row. Similar to Christian Walton, didn't quite get the 10th. Really wanted that 10th because we've got a new siren for anyone who does do that on Between the Sticks. But that's 906 minutes without conceding a goal at home. You've also now got 3 assists, I believe. So in 2022, you made more assists than any other goalkeeper.
Yeah, well, to be fair, though, only one of them was a pass. That's like, I just got lucky. To be fair, like the first of us against Sunderland, and I just remember the gaffer saying, just kick it over the left centre back's head. So I just kicked it quite far over this left centre back's head. The keeper rushed out, the striker chipped him, and I think he could have got cleared off the line, but the guy missed it or something. So it was essentially lucky in a way. Then I got one last season against Akron, which was actually a pass. They went man to man. I played the winger in, and he slotted it past the goalie. So that one I took a bit of I took a bit of happiness from that. Like, I did something well. And then the one against Burton this season, I tried kicking it to the striker. The striker and the centre-back challenged. They both missed it. And then the striker volleyed it in and the keeper got a hand to it. So it's not really something you look too much into, assist for a goalie. Unless they're like Alisson's, where he's picked someone out with a side volley. But even then, Mo Salah did unbelievable for both of them. So you can't, it's not something I look into. It just looks nice on Instagram.
Yeah, yeah. And I get too excited about it, don't I?
Well, we spoke about this. Like I say, I went through my entire career without a single assist. So, yeah, to do 3 in a season is ridiculous. Although I'm glad, I'm really happy that you've actually said what you've said there, because we do this on the show. He always does the siren on the show and we've got an assist and he'll show me the assist. And it is essentially that. So a goalie's just cleared a ball. In fact, there was one. And again, we've given him credit. I think Ryan Allsopp had one at the weekend. Exactly what you've described there. Cleared long, striker and defender both go for it. It goes over their head and someone's in on goal, which I think, I don't know. It is still an assist, of course. Technically, it's still an assist. But then I can imagine that you get a lot more joy out of that lovely side volley or putting it into a winger that then goes through and you know that it's your direct or it's what you intended to do.
Yeah, like the clearance things, that like you could do it another 10 times and another outcome comes.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it's not something I look into. I just sent it to my mates when it said I had more than Alisson. And just sent it to my mates and it was funny.
We've got to take what we can get, surely, here, no?
True. Oh, look, I'm never, ever going to... Whenever you play that siren, I'm always happy. It's just when you show me the footage and then I kind of realise what's happened, it kind of takes that away a little bit. But look, it's good, of course. We'll always promote the positive.
Okay, well, let's dig a little deeper into you as well and your character, because I read a quote of yours that said, I can live off not too much money. I don't do too much with my money. I spend most of it on food, ice cream. I love ice cream. With this new contract, I'll just buy more ice cream.
Yeah, I was they must have been stuck for news that day or something, because that was just literally, I was speaking to the local news like journalist back home that I've spoken to every year since I was 13. And it was about when I was going back to play for against Carlisle in a pre-season friendly. And I'm sure I didn't say something like that. Or if I did, I think it was a hot day. The sun must have got to us. But part of it's true, but I don't eat much ice cream. It was unbelievably hot that week, and I think I had 2 ice creams in 2 days. But most of that is true, and my sister does all my money in that, because I don't spend it. I'm like not too bothered with it all. And she said that the thing that they're like the bank, someone in the bank said that is just I eat a lot of food. And I was like, yeah, fair enough. I'd rather eat a lot of food than do other things.
Do you know, I'm a little bit disappointed. I was kind of hoping that you'd walk in there today, Matt, and you would have like one of those, what you see in a corner shop, where you've just got loads of cornettos, calippos, just everything. But it's not there.
No, it's not. But I do think that you lived on a farm as a kid, right? Yeah. I mentioned this at the top. There are some great images that I'm sure you're aware of from, what, 12 years old of you posing. So that was a photography crew that came to the farm to take those pictures of you as you signed for Manchester City. But from a character building perspective, that must have given you quite a good grounding.
Yeah, it did. And it's only something I've really realised until it was quite recently. I was talking to, there's a coach, man, the 18s coach, Max Johnson, who he essentially, like, he was one of the ones that kind of brought me into City and sort of like identified as in an aspect. And he sort of talks about me of what coaches I like and don't like. And it kind of like triggers something in my head that, like, I understand it's sort of like growing up on a farm, but I still look at it nowadays. Like, my mum and dad came to the game last night, and they live about, with their driving, about 2 hours, just over 2 hours away from Bolton in the Lakes. And like, my mum texted me when they got back, and my dad sent me a picture on Snapchat of him doing the sheep when he got back, and that was about midnight or something. So like, yeah, they're unbelievably like disciplined, and I didn't get brought up on like nothing, like on the streets, but like I never wanted the next thing. And it was just kind of like really developed of always just like working as hard as you can, because my dad still, he works as hard as he did, and my mum, they both work on the farm, and they work as hard as they did when, before me and my sister were born, to even now. Like, then they work really silly hours. Like, they always wake up at every few hours to go and check the lambs lambing now. So yeah, it really did give us like a really humbling background and growing up. And yeah, and I just played a lot outside, because we didn't have Wi-Fi until I was about 11.
But do you know how was that? Because I can imagine then going into, and I kind of relate back to, I joined Watford when I was, 10 years old, 11 years old. And I remember, like, it was a bit different for me, where I kind of went into Watford, and I was, I suppose, coming from a really small village where nothing really happened, and, you know, there's a certain culture. Then going kind of in towards London, not that Watford's London, but it's close enough, but going in towards London, obviously then mixing with, I suppose, a lot of lads I wouldn't have mixed with on a day-to-day basis. You know, it was a completely different culture, and I certainly struggled, I'd say, for the first year or two, because I wasn't really connecting with many of them. This, like, as a 10, 11-year-old, and it was only really when I was sort of 12, 13 that you then sort of feel part of the group. Did you ever have that, or was City quite good for that?
When I first moved down, when I was, so it was the start of year 8, I was 12 turning 13. I didn't really think too much of it. I just in my head thought, oh, I'm going to play football for Man City. Like, I didn't really totally process the whole moving away from home until I was actually down there. And I didn't really enjoy my first house parents, but like looking back, it was my fault. But in the moment, I thought it was their fault, because like I like playing on a PlayStation, but they were like, you have to be off at a certain time, or like you have to eat breakfast in the kitchen instead of my bedroom. But I wanted to eat in my bedroom, and it was just sort of like that sort of was like the tip of the iceberg, and I didn't really enjoy it. And but to be fair, the coaches were really good with us back then. They understood me, and so if I ever wanted like a day off school and a day off training to go back home and see my family, they let us, and they were really good with us, to be fair. And it's sort of something that I'm thankful for looking back. But it was just like small things, like hearing cars outside your window when you're trying to sleep. Like small things like that you sort of remember, and it sort of just feels weird because back home there's like nothing. So yeah, it was just a lot of weird. It was quite weird, but I sort of, like, I didn't really think too much of it. I just sort of went with the flow in a way.
12 years old. That's incredibly young to move away from home.
Yeah, it is, but it's sort of like, I didn't think much of it. It was sort of my parents and like my sister that sort of probably affected more, because for me, it was just like, I came home once a week on a Friday night when we finished like the week of school, and then I went back down on a Sunday to play a game. So it was just a lot of like, I'm just playing footy, just not what I'm used to back home. But I really enjoyed it. It was just more my parents and my sister that sort of were affected more by it. But if the day I have a kid, I don't want them to move away at 12. That's what I'd say.
Were you a big football fan?
Yeah, I loved it. Like, because especially like back home, there was nothing really to do. Like, we lived on our nearest neighbour's like a mile away, and it's another farmer that they didn't have kids at the time. So it was just like, it was all, we always used to play football. But it was weird because my dad never played football when he was younger. He only used to play football to get out of lessons at school. My mum showed horses, but worked on the farm as well. So like, no one really played football. It was only my cousin, who was a scholar at Carlisle, but then now he clipped sheep, he didn't get another contract. So it was just everyone were farmers, but for some reason, and I played football. And I just genuinely loved it. Like, I was always playing in the garden, got my dad to kick shots at his with his wellies on. So like, I just loved football because there was nothing really too much else to do. I just loved playing sport.
And goalkeeping, you're another classic accident of becoming a goalkeeper, right? You didn't start as a goalkeeper.
No, I was always chucked in goal. Like, whenever we went to like barbecues, I went around someone's house, we'd always play in goal, because I was always the youngest, I had to get through in goal. But then for some reason, I was quite good. Like, I don't know, in the moment, I was just saving shots, like the balls, I was putting my hand behind it, but it just turns out other kids couldn't really do that. And I could, so that must have made us good at that age. But it was the one thing I'm always thankful for my dad for, because I never wanted to be a goalie. I always wanted to be a centre midfielder because I was athletic. I could run and I was quite good. So I got scouted as to Carlisle under eights or under nines as a goalkeeper. But my dad, when the scout came round, was like, oh, you got to put your preferred position. I was like, midfielder. And he was talking about, no, put goalkeeper. You're a good guy. I was like, no, dad, I want to be a midfielder. And he was like, all right, cool. So he sort of had to bite his tongue on that because he'd done like getting proved wrong. And then whenever we went away to training, on the trails, my dad would always put my goalie gloves in with my mum. My mum would take me, could we share a lift with another lad back home? And he'd always put my goalie gloves in just for like the odd occasion that I might be a goalie, like just want to put them on. And I never did it. And then there was me and like, I think three other lads that like, everyone got their contracts and we got another like an extended trial. So basically, you're probably not good enough, but we'll give you another shot. And they said, oh, we've got one goal. Does anyone else want to go and go? And I went, yeah, you know what? I'll go and go. Because I knew my mum had my gloves. So I ran over to my mum, oh, can you get gloves out? So I put sort of gloves on, spat on them once, rubbed them together, and I just saved a lot of shots. And the coach went to Ben Benson, oh, this lad just played in goal, can he join in your session? And he was like, yeah, go for it. And I just really enjoyed it from then. And like, I just really enjoyed it. And Ben Benson put on a really fun session when I was 9, 8. And I just loved it. And then from there, I just was a goalie.
Do you know what? It's funny, isn't it? It's like, I mean, we talk a lot about sliding doors moments, you know, where... Yeah, that being an example where if that hadn't happened, who knows, you might have got released a few weeks later. You might have gone down a different road.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't.
Yeah, and it's just crazy. Like something as small as that and the fact that your goalie gloves were in the car. Yeah, it's crazy. But I mean, that also leads us on. I knew we'd talk about this particular gentleman at some point in this podcast, Mr. Ben Benson, because it just feels like so many goalkeepers have come through him at some point. Like it's amazing the impact. And I kind of feel like, maybe he doesn't get as much credit. I mean, I know he's coaching now at a very high level, obviously in the Championship at Blackburn and doing a brilliant job, but I kind of feel like he probably doesn't get enough credit for what he's done in goalkeeping over the last 15 years or so.
Yeah, he's a really, really, he's a really good guy. I get along with him really. I still speak to him and see him quite a lot. I see him like most weeks. And it was just sort of back then when I was like 8 or 9, because he's so like, he doesn't come from a footballing background one bit. So he's sort of like, his like total thing probably at that age was just like energy. Like he was the most energetic, loudest person. And for like a small guy, he was just really like, he was quite funny in a way, but he was just really fun. And he must have put on sessions that I found really fun when I was younger, whilst also teaching quite a lot of like just basic things, like just catching the ball and all that. And for the job he did at Carlisle, like he had Dean until he was 14. So from 9s to 14s, he had Dean, and Dean's done really well. And then he had me from like 8s, 9s, 10s, 11s, 12s. He had me for like 5 years in a way. He must just do something that really like just gets you going and just maximises you. But he's for someone to come from a non-playing background, he's done really well, and I really like him.
Do you chat to Dean Henderson much?
Sometimes, yeah, but it's sort of like when I was younger, he was doing really well, so I was sort of speaking to him because it'd be similar for like 15-year-old, like some like the younger girls that see I talk to. But it's sort of similar to that, like they look up, that I looked up to Dean, and I feel like some of the guys that see, like the younger lads, look up to me. So I was always messaging, just trying, not even like just like advice, just trying to make conversation because it was like quite cool. But then now I'm getting older, I feel now that like I'm potentially like, it could be any period of time, but I don't think it'll be long, but I'll be like, we'll be like competitors. So I don't really want to like ask him for advice, but then in the next few months, then play against him, or like next year play against. So like, I speak to him sometimes, but not regularly, not as much as I once did.
Team under a little bit of pressure here, but not for long as Trafford comes and collects. He does have that calm assurance at the back, doesn't he, belying his tender years at the age of 20.
So we're going to get on to your time at Manchester City. We've touched on it already. They were watching you from, the age of 9, I think?
Yeah,
they were watching
10, 11,
yeah. Signed you at 12. Who knows what's going to happen in the next couple of seasons or so, but we want to dig into Pep Guardiola. And I'm intrigued to know whether his approach with you as a youngster is different to his approach with Edison, with Claudio Bravo, with Stefan Ortega, with Zach Steffen, with Scott Carson as well. Have you noticed a difference in his approach to you, or is it the same across the board?
It was weird. I didn't really have too much time with him because goalie is essentially an individual sport in a sport. I was a lot with Shabby, the goalie coach, but it was like the odd things that he'd say to you would really stick with you. Like he'd just say, "Oh, like well done, you made some good saves," and then you go, "Oh, like thank that feels quite nice," because like it's rare. Like even now, like someone says something nice to you. Like, so, like, it was quite nice when he'd say some stuff, and then because I was always out, like, because I was a second-year scholar, I was doing as much, like, finishing drills, like, crossing, I was doing anything I can, and he'd always, like, for some reason, like, join in, or, like, he'd, like, at the end, like, take a penalty or something, or have a shot.
You just mentioned him there, so Xabi I wanted to talk about, because obviously he's been at City for a while now, obviously you've got a great relationship with him, he's helped you massively by the looks of things, so... But I've got a couple of questions on him. One is that, obviously, Man City goalkeepers, is it fair to say that there's a certain, almost reputation, which is very much a positive one in terms of how he would look to build a goalkeeper that might be different? We talk about this, use Ben Roberts as a good example where, you know, I know he's got certain ideas on when it comes to taking crosses and positions that maybe the Brighton goalkeepers might take up from time to time. Of course, he's moved on to Chelsea now, but certainly historically what he did there. And it's fair to say that Xavi as well has got certain ideas on goalkeeping that he's helped instill into you.
Yeah, he does. He sort of like, I really like it that he's instilled throughout the whole academy. So like the under nines are getting trained with the same techniques as like that we're trying, that like the pros are trying to learn and trying to perfect in a way. So that's really good. And it's the best thing I like with it is that like there's always like a reason for like not saving the shot. So it's like your body weight's not there or your set position's not right. So like that's what the best thing, and it just sort of helps you go into games with like confidence of like if this happens, you do this. If this happens, you do this. Because speaking to a lot of people, like the coaches that look back on their time, they always say they wish they had like the techniques and like the process we have, because they said they go into games like praying they don't get, for instance, like a shot on the angle, which they can't foot save because like they don't know, they can't get down quick enough. So... that's what I really like him, but like he really tries to instill these like techniques, and the training's all done for to instill these techniques in us. But then the tough part for like me, and I'm sure Stefan's having it at Borough, is that when you go away and the goalie coaches are different and they don't know these techniques, and like they don't know like the service for the drills and all that, it's quite hard to keep doing the techniques, and it's just you kind of rely on what you've learned and how good you are as a goalie, essentially.
Yeah. Do you know what? I love that, because I love the, and I guess this is probably fair to say, it's throughout City on the whole, the way in which they built the football club and the players that are coming through, where it is so process driven, you know. And I think, again, I look back to when I played, and at times maybe a little bit too emotional, where it would be a, like you say, you concede a bad goal, and then rather than actually looking at it from a perspective, okay, what can I do there? What is it in the technique that's let me down, and actually really working on the process, it might then just be a And I see a lot of goalkeepers do it now, and it's a natural thing to almost hide in that moment. You know, a cross comes in, you often know that, oh, do you know what, I can stay on my line here and I'll probably get away with it. Or, you know, a through ball and you stay a little bit too deep or whatever. But actually, like, again, I'm saying this just because the amount that I've watched you play and I see how you play, where there's no real fear. And even if you do make an error or something doesn't go quite right, it's not then a complete shift in your game. You know, it seems like it is all very process driven, and that kind of idea that almost every shot can be saved, but the question is how, as opposed to being too upset about the goal going in.
Yeah, and that's what I find the best way about it being process driven, is that you just play the ball. You don't play the occasion, because at the end of the day, the football, whether you play it like we played at Wembley or you play it on the small stadiums, like for instance, like the side stadium, like Burton, Accrington, Morecambe, it's still the same game and the ball still circular. You still starts with 11 players. The goals are the same size. So, like, you don't play the moment. Like, the moment might affect you a little bit because, like, it's your first time playing at Wembley, or, like, you feel a bit ill, or for instance. So, like, them kind of things might affect you. But you train the ball all the time and you do the same techniques for that ball. So whether it's a cross, you do the same techniques for that cross, or a shot to, like, low right. You do the same things, so it doesn't really, you can play anywhere. Like the coach told us before I played at Wembley, like, you've played with process like all your life. Like, the best thing about it is that you can play at Wembley and you should feel the same essentially once you get over the fact that it's Wembley. So that's what I'm most thankful for about him.
That's what's so different now as well, isn't it, about goalkeeping there? You've played with process your whole life. So you've been there since the age of 12 years old. So you have come through that system, which I guess never really used to happen, but you've been used to that process from such a young age, for 8 years now, which makes such a difference to who you are as a goalkeeper, working with the likes of Xavi. And actually, let's just touch on, I guess, your growth at Manchester City and probably your first professional, not appearance, but involvement with the matchday squad. Just talk us through that.
So my first involvement with the squad was we played in the Papa John's the night before for the 21s against Scunthorpe away, and I played that game and finished, and then like the person that organised everything, I don't know what the name of them are, but like they're at every club, the person that organised everything told us, oh, you're the first team tomorrow, like just report for this time. And I was like, oh bloody hell, like what am I going to do here? So like, I was driving, and then like I texted Liam or something, Liam Delap. I was like, I'll wait in reception for his, because like, I don't know where to go, don't know anyone. So then it was good, but it was a bit sort of like, I'd rather it been a training day, because like training you get to know, and then like if you do well, which I'd have backed myself to have done back then, they'd respect you and talk to you and all that. So I went in and I was like, didn't know anyone. And I remember my first conversation was Pep, and I can't remember what it was, but it was like, it was one of them ones, like, you know, when like a waiter goes, oh, enjoy your meal, and you go, you too. It was something like that.
Yeah. I know exactly.
It was something like that. And it was like, looking back, I was thinking, why have I just said that? Like, I was just so nervous to like see Pep. I've watched him on telly, like growing up, and then to actually see it. It was something really random like that. And then to be fair, I spoke to Zach Steffen, was really good. He spoke to us straight away. And I think Scott had COVID or something. And then it was just really weird. So like, I was expecting to do like the warmth and everything, like really feel, but I didn't do the warm up because of like warming up with two. But I remember in the changes, I got put on like a blue, like it was like a garden chair or something because it was COVID in, and there weren't enough seats for like, I was like 21st, 19th man or whatever it was. And I just remember them playing like two touch over the table of drinks. It was like folding someone else, but like they were ridiculous, like flying it. I was thinking, like, I hope they don't ask me to get involved here. Because like, I'd like skittle all these bottles over. It's sort of like, you sort of realise like, oh, this is the level and this is how good they are. My age, we were good, but like this like really opened your eyes. And then the next day I trained with them. And yeah, like once you got over the first, like the fact, like the first few times, like Jesus, this is like really high standard. I actually like, you really just went back to like your process, and it was like, oh, like this is what you do for this bar. And to be honest, I feel like I did quite well when I went up with them, like especially the first few times. And then the first time I was on the bench was, it was the Youth Cup, it came around to be the Youth Cup. And we played Blackburn on the Friday night. Then after the game, they're like, oh, you have to go to Sheffield United tomorrow because Stephens got injured or something. It was something on that day. So I was like, all right, so I went there. And then Carson went down in the warmth injured. And I was thinking, oh, bloody hell, like, I'm on the bench here. So like, I started off the game. I remember then I was like, because like, the benches, you couldn't sit next to each other. So like, we're in the seats behind. And everyone had like the big coats on. And I was just there in my jumper, sort of looking around. And the camera went on us. I was like, didn't know what to do. And then I had to get my shirt halfway through the game because they didn't have one printed up. And then I was just thinking throughout the game, like, oh God, like, of all teams, Sheffield United, like, I know what would happen if like, every time the ball went in Edison, I was thinking, oh God, they're going to, like, lay one on him. I'll come on and I'll, like, McBurney, Egan, all standing on us. But then it was like, then it was over and it was quite nice. And then I trained with them. And there was a Youth Cup final on the Munda. And I was expecting to play in that. And then they didn't have a goalie for the first team. Would only have Edison and they'd have to be me. So then when I had to be on the bench for them on the Tuesday, like, in the moment, I was like, I was devastated. I wanted to play in the Youth Cup final because, like, it was the lads I've grown up with, and Youth Cups is essentially the, like, the epitome of youth football. Like, it's the biggest thing, and I didn't get to play in it, and I was, like, devastated at the time. And then when I was on the bench the next day, and I remember the coach went to us, oh, if you play tonight, we'd still win. And I was like, you know what, this has made me feel quite good, this. So, like, it was good, to be fair, yeah.
In terms, I mean, it's an amazing story that the fact that you missed a Youth Cup final is, I guess, is tough. It would have been Kieran Slicker in goal.
Yeah.
How much do you actually learn from being involved in a match day squad? Because you are thrown in at the deep end there. That's a baptism of fire. And sometimes, you know, you can sink or swim.
To be fair, I feel like the year I was involved was the COVID season where there was no fans. It was, like, once you'd, like, done it the first, like, one or two times, you sort of, like, you came away from, like, the excitement of, like, oh, I'm, like, with the first team. You like, it's just kind of got normal in a way. But the most thing I quite, like, enjoyed was watching the other team's goalies. Because there was no fans, you could, like, hear them. And, like, you could sort of see how they were. And it just sort of really opened my eyes in, like, all the other goalies, with how little anyone shouts. Because, like, growing up, especially, everyone's like, oh, you've got to be loud, you've got to, like, organise your defence, and you've got to be, like, a presence. But then like, the biggest one was, like, I listened to Schmeichel's podcast with you guys, and he was just like, now, like, everyone's, like, calm, because, like, the defence want to look at you at being calm, not this, like, really loud person. And that's what all the Prem goalies were like, apart from Robert Sanchez. He's the one that I remember who just was really, like, shouted all the time. It was like battering the linesman, and he was really loud. And that, but then it kind of made me understand that he played in the EFL where he would have been told to do that. So maybe that stuck with him. But it just sort of opened my eyes to all the keepers go, he's keeper away, or like just keepers in a way. That's all.
Well, they're clearly listening to the podcast, aren't they? That's why.
There you go.
That's big, isn't it, Rich? That's massive on communication.
No, do you know what? I can relate again for the few games that I've played in the Premier League. I mean, I speak about this quite a lot, in that when you're in that kind of cauldron, especially when, you know, you said obviously during the COVID year, maybe slightly different, but you can only get so much across to your defenders. Whereas when you're playing at Aki, you know, I'm sure that it is a little bit different because, of course, they can all hear you and you can be that little bit more vocal. But I do remember that it was almost like I started the game, or the games that I was playing, started, you know, screaming, shouting, trying to order people around, and then soon realised, actually, until they're in our box, there's no real point in doing it anyway. And as you say, if anything simplifies the game, which probably leads on to a different subject, where if anything, it can simplify the game. So you kind of find that in the Premier League, a lot of what you're doing is you're shot stopping. You try your best to organise, but as I say, you can't necessarily hear them as well. You're surrounded by these incredible stadiums, so you're not necessarily feeling the elements as much as you might in a Conference South game on a wet, windy Tuesday night. The pitches are normally great when you're playing it to your teammates. So they've obviously got that little bit more ability. And if anything, it kind of can simplify a game. But then what you've obviously got as well is, and again, you'll appreciate this now, Traff, obviously the level that you're playing and some of the games you've played, is that the pressure, or so-called pressure, can be that much more, in that, you know, the scrutiny gets bigger and bigger the higher you go. And, you know, you can feel the crowd that bit more when there's 30,000, 35,000 in a stadium.
Yeah, and I also think the big one is that it doesn't matter how loud you try to shout at someone if they're outside your box. If you play in front of, like, 60,000, you're just wasting your breath. Like, yeah, they can't hear you. But it just sort of really opened my eyes to, like, growing up, everyone telling you to, like, oh, like, ball's on one side, took the fullback in, but he's, like, standing, like, 50 yards away from you. But on, like, a Saturday morning, they can't hear you because there's no fans. To then go into the Prem, like, to, like, watching it, and, like, no one's really shouting. Apart from keeper and away, like, just like the quite important things. So It was one of the good things I quite learned from it all.
Yeah. Do you know, I'm going to take it on a slight tangent, but this just come back to me and I thought I'd mention it because I always remember this made me smile when we spoke about this a couple of years ago. But am I right in saying you were on the bench in a Champions League game, and I love this. I mean, you spoke about your mates quite a lot already on this podcast. Am I right in saying the next day you were then running the line? You were linesman yeah. for your mates.
Yeah, it would have been the next day off we got. One of my mates played Sunder League at the time and they needed a lino. So then, because I got put as linesman. So I had to run the line.
I love that. From Champions League to, I don't even know what division that would be.
dog and duck.
But that again, so you're on the bench for a Champions League game, PSG, you've got Neymar. We don't normally talk about outfielders here, but I do just want to dig into what training was like at Manchester City. You've alluded to it in some respects, doing the two-touch over the cups in the changing room. But facing the likes of Kevin De Bruyne, of Sergio Aguero, what was that like as a young goalkeeper?
It was just sort of like you just realised the levels of what these guys genuinely are like. Like they'd always do the finishing thing after training, like the ping it into the D, touch shoot. And it was like there was no free saves. There was no like shots at you that you could save and go, all right, I'm like, I haven't conceded one here. Like everything was literally like the post. It was either like hit the post or like half a yard inside the post. And it just sort of showed you the levels that if you want to like save something and like not just like be a mannequin in net, you've got to be fully on it. And that was one of the best things because when I was with the first team, I didn't really play for the 23s because you couldn't swap between bubbles. It was like I was going into training every day like so in the same mindset as a game, like I'm fully switched on. And like it was like, and I feel like if I weren't at that mindset, I'd have been like, you'd have been a bystander. Like you can't keep up with like the world's best with that. But like they were just like the quality they were just like another level. And like when we did the like small siders, like they didn't feel pressure. Like you could give them the ball with like a person literally an inch from them and just deal with it, play it. But then another way it like brings better into you because like they demand of you. And because you were a young goalie, like if they could deflect the blame, they would deflect the blame onto you. Like, so, like, yeah, it really sort of made you more, like, self-assured and, like, you had to be, like, on it. And, like, when they say something, if you don't believe in yourself, you go under. So it was a real big, like, learning part of my life.
And you mentioned EFL Trophy there. So did you play EFL Trophy for the 21s,
yeah,
for Man City? So I'm keen to ask you about this and whether you learned much from that and whether you think it's a good thing, because it is quite divisive amongst ardent EFL fans who don't believe that Premier League teams should be involved in it.
Yeah.
Some say that it's a very good thing because it gives you guys, you know, an experience of playing professional senior football at a young age. Do you think it helped your development?
I think the EFL, like, so I've had both like sides. So when I was a second year, I played against Mansfield first game of the season, and then we played Scunny, and like the pros don't understand what it means for like the young lads, because like these are like our like biggest games, like the ones you're most excited for, because you get your name on the back of your shirt, you're playing like a proper stadium against men who, like, for instance, like they don't look down on you, but they're sort of like, oh, these are academy lads, we'll like push them over. So like they're essentially kind of like our like biggest games of the season, or like one of the biggest games of the season. But then I've also noticed it from the other side, where I've been a boy, I didn't play in it for like the earlier rounds against any of the 21s teams, but like they're normally highly rotated teams that play in it, and like especially if you do play in the group stage against like a 21s team, it's sort of like, oh, like it's kind of like that in a way. But then I also think it's good for the 21s teams because they see the level, because like a lot of them they'll all be thinking they're good players, but then they come against the pros, and like there's not been one 21s team like get really far in it and win it. So they see the levels and like they're just experienced. But I do think it is a really good thing.
Speaking of Wembley in the EFL Trophy, we have to touch on that because that was quite a big moment for you.
Yeah, it was really big. So I'm close with the right wing back Conor Bradley, who's Northern Irish, and like because he's Northern Irish growing up in Northern Ireland, like he doesn't see like the importance and like the special thing about Wembley that, say, like you don't see it as much as I do growing up in England, and like Wembley's where all like the big games get played, and you're sort of like, and like some people never play at Wembley in the career, and And like, it was sort of like a really exciting thing, and like how big it is. Like, I've been there, I was there twice for with City, but I was always like, I just did the warm ups and that was me. I was never on the bench or played. And yeah, it was a real big experience and something that you sort of take a lot of like learning from, because I used to always have like a thing of, or like if I don't really get nervous, but I always have butterflies, but I'm never like nervous, like panicking. And but if I ever sort of felt a bit of nerves, I'd always go, oh, I played at stadium like when I was 18, and like I had the whole stadium booming, so like nothing can ever be as bad as that. So but then now, like, I've got, oh, I've played at Wembley, so like nothing will ever compare to that. It's at 20. But it was weird. So before the game, me and Connor were talking, like, we've got two ends of the spectrum, like pre-season friendly, where you're not really too bothered, like, and the other end of the spectrum is like really, really nervous, like borderline don't want to go out and play. We were like in the middle somewhere, sort of like league game. And we said we were more at the way of sort of more calmer than like a league game, because it was so nice. Like, the pitch was perfect. There was no wind. It was like perfect conditions in a way. And that sort of, and I think a lot of the team felt in that same way. And that's why we played so well.
Do you know, I think there's something quite big in that as well, in that, you know, we talk a lot on the podcast about experience and experienced goalkeepers and whatever, but even that, and again, you know, winning that and obviously having had success, you know, and a lot of the experience you've had now has been really positive experience. You've obviously had one or two knockbacks. We spoke about Aki, but I think that as well, going into a game like that, of course, there's only so much you can control as a goalkeeper, but going out, putting in a very good performance, winning a trophy, you know, especially when you can really develop that kind of mindset, almost an expectation that you're going in to win games, you know, which is, and I guess being part of the City environment, I guess that's another thing that is almost bred into you.
Yeah, it is sort of like being in a team that dominates the ball, and like the expectation to win is sort of like something I'm really used to. And then that's why I'm quite looking forward to the day I play for a team that at the other end, like trying to like survive. That'll be like I'm quite excited for that, because it's a total different, like, you're going into games totally different, that you're going to be like up against it. You're going to like a point would be like a good result at times. So like, that's what I'm quite looking forward to. But yeah.
Okay, we've got a few more questions until Rich gets to his final one. So just like we said at the top there, right, this is your first podcast, right? First podcast you've ever done. Yeah. So you speak very well. You're clearly psychologically strong. You signed a 5-year deal with City last summer. Mm. So that takes you through to the summer of 2027. Mm. What's next for you? What's happening next season? Or what do you think might happen next season?
I genuinely don't know. I just want to, it's been my dream to always play in the Premier League and play for England, and I just want to do that as soon as possible. So I'd like to do something that'll put us in give us the best opportunity of doing both. But it's sort of something I don't really think too much of the future. I just like to take it a day at a time, or a game, because the time you start focusing about something else, you lose focus of what's important, and that's the now. So, and especially that we'll hopefully get in the playoffs, and then I'll have the Euros to prepare for. It's not really something about next season I've really wasted my energy thinking on too much, because I know as soon as I do that, my performance levels will drop, and I'll start thinking about other things.
Okay, Richard, over to you for the final question.
Indeed. I think you know the final question, Traff. I'm pretty sure you do. James Trafford, what has goalkeeping given you?
A job.
Two words.
There you go. That's the shortest we've ever had.
That's the shortest I think we'll ever have.
By a long stretch.
Well, no, it's a job and a lot of fun, because if I didn't, I'd be working on the farm with my dad. Yeah. if I weren't a goalie, because... I wasn't the best at school, and all I can do is really talk, save shots, and kick a ball.
There you go. Keep it simple. Keep it as simple as you can. Oh, I love that.
Work smarter, not harder. There you go. Nice and circular. James Trafford, thank you very much for joining us.
Been a pleasure.
So that was Mr. James Trafford. Thoroughly enjoyed that one.
Very good, very good. I think, as I said before, and I guess that would have come out in the interview, like, as young as he is, so much has happened in such a short space of time. And I think I mentioned it there in the pod, like, something, and I've said this many times, I think we've even said it on Between the Sticks, like, his mentality for someone of his age, And again, it's something I'll probably say to a lot of younger goalkeepers listening in. That, for me, is the mentality. You know, that self-confidence, self-belief, with the drive that he's still got, the work ethic he's still got. Yeah, really, really good match.
Yeah, I tell you what I really like about James Trafford is the fact that there are no airs nor graces about him. What you see really is what you get. He's very much who he is as a person. There's no nonsense. There's no saying it for the sake. You know how some people will make out like they really don't care about something when really they do care about something and they're so blasé. There are many people in the public eye who are so blasé about fame and desperately trying to not be massive time that actually they are massive time. Do you know what I mean by that? It's people who dress down as well. They'll walk out of the house and just say, oh, you know, I just popped on any old thing. When actually that any old thing is a well thought out fashion statement, which actually negates the whole point of the fact that you're wearing any old thing because you've really thought about wearing that any old thing because you are bothered about what people think of you in that any old thing. So James Trafford is the complete opposite of that. He doesn't care much for money, for those nice clothes, for good food. He just cares about being the best goalkeeper he can be. And I think that really came across.
Mm. I love the journey you just took us on there. I mean, that was quite the tangent to come back to your point. It was great. One of your best yet. But no, I'd agree. Well, even the fact that, and we obviously mentioned it before the show, during the show, and now mentioning it after the show, like the fire alarm situation just probably sums him up where he just doesn't care. He's almost now, like that's beeping. It'll take him a minute to change the battery, but just doesn't really care. He's just, you know, he's got his day-to-day. He does what he does and yeah, he just cracks on with it. And as you say, I think where he's got that focus that he has got and he's got to go back to it, that inner belief, I think it is a real pure focus. There aren't a lot of other things, as you say, whether it is the nice clothes or the nice car or the nice, he just gets on with it. And again, I suppose it's quite refreshing because we spoke a little bit about his background and where it being maybe that little bit different from a lot of footballers that you'll speak to. But it's nice that he's kept a lot of those core values.
His family being one of those too. Did you notice how many times he mentioned his mum, his dad, his sister?
Yeah, amazing. And yeah, it's such an unusual, again, and again, I know footballers come from all walks of life and there isn't necessarily a particular, but it is so unique, his story, you know, and it's so unusual as well, because you think coming or growing up in that kind of environment to then become a, you know, well, world-class goalkeeper and potentially, you know, we're doing this pod now, it'll be interesting in 3-4 years where James Trafford will be at that point. You know, I think the trajectory that he's had, can't think of many young goalkeepers that have had such a rise to the point he's at now so quickly. And you feel like he's going to go again, but so few. Ordinarily, there will be maybe a little bit more of an environment wherever you grew up where you'd hone your skills. You know, all the greats that you talked to, there always seems to be something that just happened. But he didn't have that till that little bit later. And I think a lot of that, there's probably quite a nice thing in that, that when he was very young, he's obviously had such a normal upbringing. And then obviously when a lot of the bigger things happen, he's already developed, I guess, his personality. He's already developed who he is. And it's really nice that he's been able to carry that through.
And to touch on the content of the pod, that's really proof in the loan pudding, isn't it there? That is why they can be so successful. It's easy to say when it's a kid from Man City who they can afford to let go for a few seasons, but still, it shows how a positive and a negative with his time at Accrington, similar to what we've seen with Gambazunu and Robert Sanchez in recent seasons, can really be beneficial. And I think when he said he learned from Edison too, playing every game at 100 miles per hour at first, he took that from Edison, that being in the same state in every game actually helped him with his goalkeeping. And the first time he trained with the club as well, he was back to the process. He was concerned the first time. He thought, am I going to be able to match up to these guys? But it was back to the process. He realised that they're good, but so am I.
Yeah, well, I think that Man City, and again, we've definitely said this on Between the Six, but I just think that their model when it comes to goalkeepers is the model to follow. Now, I appreciate that not all clubs have got the infrastructure or the finances, etc., that Man City have. But I just think the way that they've done it in recent years, you look at maybe so many clubs that they'll maybe produce goalkeepers, might send them out on loan, but very few will ever come through and play for the first team, certainly in the Premier League. It's so, so difficult. But I think the strategy that City have gone down, certainly with Gavin Batsunu, be interesting to see what they do now with James Trafford, because of course it is so much more difficult to break in at a Man City. They can go and sign whoever they want, but what they're doing is producing, for a start, they've created this world-class environment where he is training with Edison. He is training with Man City first team. So in terms of a day-to-day environment where you have to improve so quickly to get to the level, that will have been huge for him. And the fact that the loans have been as good as they are, and even the ones that have been a bit more difficult, i.e. the Accrington one, the lessons that he's learned, he's taken that into Bolton. Yeah, it's just been a phenomenal time at Bolton. And in terms of a start to your career, you know, going into your 20s and have that kind of CV behind you, it's fantastic. And it's something that I think a lot of other clubs will look at. And if they can replicate, that has to be the model for a younger goalkeeper.
Absolutely. Okay, Richard, this was a good one. We've got plenty more of these coming up, haven't we, over the course of the next few months. So listeners, do keep your eyes and ears out for more interviews. I'm also happy to say that I'm warmer now. As much as I loved doing that podcast, it was Baltic inside that house. I walked in and after about a minute, just thought I'd say, James, it's quite cold in here, mate. You do know that. He said, yeah, don't put the heating on. Don't want to spend money on that. Right, okay, well, that's fine. He stood there in shorts and flip-flops, and I'm covered from head to toe, but shivering all throughout that podcast. It was freezing.
Brilliant. Yeah, brilliant. And that's, again, probably backs up everything we've just said about Mr. Trafford.
It does. Mr. Minimalist. Richard, thank you.
Matthew, thank you.
This has been the Goalkeepers Union podcast. Keepers
away.